pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We head around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. The biggest story here locally, Billy Hamilton, designated for assignment, batted 211 this season and just 275 at-bats. Brett Phillips gets the call-up from AAA Omaha. Phillips had been red hot the last 3 months, or last 2.5 months, I guess I should say, of the season. It also will mean that service time-wise, if he stays up the rest of the year, he will have a full year of service accumulated. Many speculated, led by me, that with 140 days of service time, they were just going to bury him until September 1st in an effort to make sure that they would then still have 6 years of team control after this year. Not the case. They brought him up. I applaud the Royals for going out and rewarding the kid when it's time to reward him. Let's get things started in Atlanta. Chris Domino is there, 680 The Fan in Atlanta, Georgia. Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. I get to play Ronald Acuna today, huh?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Lead it off.
Lead it off. Take it and go. Let's start with that. Is he going to get to 40-40, and how important is it to him?
Probably very. Look, it's really crazy. His money's in. You know, they did a long-term deal with him and Ozzie Albies. They certainly look like team-friendly deals, and that's why you ask these guys, would you like to relax and play, or do you want to play for your money somewhere down the road? I'm not telling you it's the smartest formula for players or teams, but I do think guys get relaxed. I honestly believe that once you know you've got it, I think it's a little bit easier to calm down. I can tell you he started stealing bases after the All-Star game like it mattered. What I like about it, I don't think it's a greedy thing, but at some point during the postseason, whether it's a pitcher-catcher matchup or you're going to need an extra 90 feet, he's going to have the ability to go get it. They haven't really had that around here in a long time.
Now, and I'll tell you what, he is a tremendous all-around player, and has now put himself right into the middle of the MVP race. So we'll see if he gets there. Is the NL East over? They've got a 5.5 lead now, the Braves. Is it over?
You know, the Mets thing, taking 2 out of 3 was really big, and I'm not telling you they were going to catch him. But sort of had to prove that you could face the hottest team in baseball and stare him down at least to some degree until last night's disaster. I don't like it's over. I like the idea that I believe they're going to play a series and not have to play a one-game play-in to try to advance. The math says that they're going to do it because as bad as the stretch has been 500 for a fairly extended period of time, they're not playing below 500. So if their worst is this, then I think they have an ability to hang on.
Yeah, and the teams chasing them have their own faults. I know the Mets were red hot there for a while. They were also playing bottom feeders, and now they're having to play better teams, and they're looking kind of 500-ish themselves.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about the Falcons. They lose. What is the feeling about the performance last night and the loss?
Yeah, let me tell you, the idea that they lost a preseason game, like we don't even – it doesn't register. They've lost 11 in a row. Like, I don't know if that's possible. And I'm not telling you it's an indication of what your season's going to be, but you would think at some point you'd win one of these because I don't know how hard the other guy is trying. The big story around here last night was Matt Ryan was hit 8 times. 8 times. They changed centers. They pulled their all-pro Alex Mack out and put a guy named Wes Schweitzer in, and Matt Ryan was still on the field. He got hit 8 times. The bottom of his cleats, every section in the building saw the bottom of his cleats last night. He got turtled 8 different times, and I think he had to explain to his linemen, I don't have a red penny on, boys. You know, Greg Williams, you know, Dr. Nasty, whatever the hell he's calling himself these days to try to keep himself out of trouble, is the guy for the Jets. You knew he was going to blitz from the light towers. He's trying to find out who can play. We actually had people in this town saying, what are they doing blitzing that much? I don't know. They're evaluating their players. They're trying to prove that some of them can play. You got to do a better job of protecting the $100 million guy.
Yeah, no doubt. What's the early returns on Dirk Cutter returning as the offensive coordinator? They like what they see so far?
Yeah, you know, he's sort of got an edge to him, which I like. He's a little bit – it's funny because somebody said to me, hey, can you imagine if the tight ends pull out a jug gun just to prove to him they can catch football? Dirk Cutter will dismantle that thing. He'll take a bat to it. You know, he wants you to be able to catch the football, but he's about blocking. He's about knowing your assignment, you know, whether it's a block at the line of scrimmage or a block downfield. So he's got a little bit of an edge to him. I like it. He's not a rah-rah mean type guy. Like, he's not loud, but they know where you know where you stand with Dirk Cutter. And I like the idea that him and Matt have been in that room for as long as they had been. From everything I was told, including hearing from Matt Ryan, they picked it right up as if he had never left, which is a really good thing. I do think that's a tangible thing, not sort of this thing that's a theory.
All right, and Dan Quinn back as the defensive coordinator, head coach, but also handling the D.C. duties, early returns?
If he has all his players, there's a chance he'll see the defense he wants. He couldn't get it last year. Middle linebacker Jones out. Keanu Neal, bad man out. Ricardo Allen, bad man out. They both played last night, which was good. We weren't sure if those guys were going to play in the preseason. If he gets those guys rolling down a hill, it's funny. I had a conversation with him the day he got here from Seattle, and I had asked him, as a DC, how important is it to know what the record is the following week of the team you just played? He goes, it's so funny. That's all I care about. And I think what he means, that's all he cares about, is did you beat the crap out of people? Well, they didn't beat the crap out of people. I sat down with him earlier this year, and it was just about that. There was never an uncomfortable feeling. For as many weapons as they had, they went a bunch of games scoring under 20 points in today's NFL. That means the defensive coordinator wasn't sweating anything, and the offensive coordinator wasn't sweating getting his guys beat up. They've got to change that. You've got to be an uncomfortable team during a week of practice when the other guy's trying to get ready for you. They were not that at all last year.
All right, and fantasy minds want to know, do I buy all these reports about how great Devonta Freeman looks?
Yeah. Now, can you tell me that he's not going to lower his head and take a headshot? Can you guarantee me that he's not going to try to pick up an extra yard and a half? And instead of playing it a little bit safer, curl up. It's funny, I will tell you this. If you want him, Warrick Dunn actually told him. Warrick Dunn, who played here and obviously Tampa, really good player. They brought him in to explain to Devonta Freeman how you roll up your body. Warrick Dunn said, I was small. He said, I'm not sure. It's him. He said, I'm not sure I ever got squared up, ever in my career. I knew how to curl up. I knew how to get out of the way, put my shoulder down without putting it in harm's way, kept my head out of those headshots. We played in the day where it was a little bit more likely he was going to get one. They actually are trying to teach Devonta. If he learns that lesson and being on the field is better than not being on the field the way it's been for him, I think he's got an opportunity down low to be the touchdown guy.
Chris,
absolutely, they want to teach him.
Very good. Chris Domino in Atlanta. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Pete Fox is on the Sunset Strip, NBC Sports Radio in Los Angeles, California. Pete, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. The Atlanta Falcons haven't won a preseason game in a part of four preseasons. That is a trend. I'll tell you what's going to make that change. I will bet on them next week and they'll win.
Yes, I have a similar feeling about jumping on trends like that. I'll be the one that ends it. All right, DeMarcus Cousins, done for the year with the Lakers. How big a blow is this for them?
Well, it's a little bit. I mean, they were cautiously optimistic about what he would bring to the table. You know, he's obviously been dealing with injuries for the last few years. And they've been, you know, major with the Achilles in 18. And they, you know, as kind of a bargain after a fairly decent season with the Warriors last year, they thought they might be stealing a piece here. And he, you know, shows up and before camp even starts, he gets injured. So, you know, it's one of those things where they had high expectations, cautiously optimistic about what they were going to get from him. And then it all goes up in flames. So, yeah, they're a little disappointed. Not a lot, because they didn't really expect all that much, but hope that it would be a good sort of sneaky acquisition.
Wow. All right. Do they have any other moves that they can make? I mean, I don't know that there's really any names out there, but is there any other move that the Lakers will try to make to try to fill his hole?
Well, the only name that keeps rolling around is Carmelo Anthony, because, you know, he has put it out there that he wants to be on a team, he wants to play. He and LeBron are friends. So, you know, it seems like at this point in time, at this juncture of his career, he understands who he is, where he fits in, expects to be a bench player, et cetera, et cetera. So the most important part of that is that he knows his role. So the fact that he's LeBron's buddy, maybe they could use him to fill that. Also, they're different players, different positions, et cetera. That's the one name that keeps rolling around.
By the way, I realize what I said, and thank you for just answering a question based on what I meant and not what I actually said right there. That's, I saw the reaction from everybody. I was like, wait a minute, and I thought about what I said. So thank you very much, Pete, for being a complete professional there. All right, Rams headed to Hawaii to take on – I'm kind of lost here right now. Rams headed to Hawaii take on the Cowboys. They're leaving 20 starters at home. What's the reaction from fans about? Listen, I love the move, by the way. I'm trying to get Patrick Mahomes to play in no preseason games here in Kansas City. What's the reaction there in L.A.?
Yeah, you know, it's not a big one because, you're right, it's not terribly surprising. I think it's more surprising the other way. When you do see guys out there, even for a series or whatever, you know, like Derek Carr played yesterday, that was surprising. When you see them out there, you're more surprised than when you don't. So this has been their MO with a lot of their stars for a while. So it's not terribly surprising when you throw in the amount of travel involved. But, you know, you'd like to see a little bit from a guy like Jared Goff on the field, just kind of getting rhythm with his team. I know he's familiar with most of those guys. It's not like there's a bunch of new players, new receivers. They've all been there. They all know each other. So I guess it's what you would expect. And it's, some people choose to take that path. Others don't when it comes to preseason football. So when you factor in the travel, then it's not terribly surprising, though.
How much is Todd Gurley going to get used this year? Have they talked about what kind of usage they expect for him?
The term, Seren, is load management. It's not usage. there's a lot of talk about that, for sure. And it feels like they're going to wade into the shallow end of this season to try and manage that load as much they can, as much as they can, especially against lesser opponents. But don't be surprised if Todd Gurley is not starting games or not finishing games early in the season in the hopes that he's more healthy as the season rolls on when they get into the postseason, you know, with the hopes that they do get there. Yeah, it's going to be a little different, I feel, when you see what happens with him and how his usage is progressing through the early part of the season.
Derwin James breaks a bone in his foot. He's in a walking boot. What's the expectation for how long he'll be out for the Chargers?
They talked about this injury, and they say it's the fifth metatarsal of the foot, which evidently is worse than the fourth or the third or whatever. So they say that,
well, of course,
you know, best case scenario, they say 5 to 6 weeks. Normal is about 8 to 9. Worst case, about 15. So yeah, it's a lot worse than you would think for just breaking a bone in your foot. So. They are disappointed because he was very big for them last year, played a big role. They're very high on him, and it's definitely a blow for sure. But, yeah, about 8 to 9 weeks is what they're looking at.
All right, Albert Pujols becomes the hit king for players born outside the United States. He passed Adrian Beltre. How much did this register out there?
You know, a little bit. I mean, people still enjoy seeing him. They've become a fan of him over the years. It's just like the Mike Trout scenario. It's just sad and unfortunate that it all is for naught. It just means nothing. You know, these guys are putting up big numbers. Mike Trout is 40th home run last night, leading the American League, tied with Cody Bellinger. And no, as far as Angel goes, it doesn't mean anything because, you know, they're fighting to be 500. So I think people admire him. People enjoy him. He's a good guy. And, you know, you kind of feel like, well, I don't know if he's actually ultimately lived up to that huge contract, but he's been at least respectable. And he just keeps every few weeks, it's another one of these milestones where you're like, wow, this guy's amazing. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. I think in the back of everyone. So it's just been kind of a sad and unfortunate disappointment that it hasn't meant anything as far as postseason appearances or wins. They've had zero under him and Mike Trout. So when you see all of that, you're like, just wow. You know, it means absolutely nothing as far as producing wins. As far as the stadium, you know, Artie Moreno is happy because it has increased since the beginning of that contract their attendance, and they make money because of stars like Albert Pujols. But as far as making them a better baseball team, it just has not worked out.
Yeah, that was the part I wondered, you know, is there an attendance boost to it? Because that's part of the reason why you do it. You want to win baseball games first and foremost, but also, hey, come on out and see Albert Pujols set another record. It's something that I think, you know, people would be trumpeting. Interesting to know how they respond. Pete Fox in Los Angeles. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
She said the prettiest place on earth was Baltimore at night.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Saran. It's good to talk to you. Congratulations on afternoon.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that very much. And I guess congratulations on a Ravens preseason victory. I don't know.
Yeah. 14 straight.
Yeah, yeah.
14 straight preseason wins. Yeah. So weird, Saran. It's so weird, man. Like, you know, what do you even say? We were talking about it on my show earlier today. I'm at, like, everybody's raving about the Lamar Jackson touchdown run last night that wasn't because it got called back. And, like, the only thing I could think of in that moment is the last thing I want Lamar Jackson doing in a preseason game
right.
is running to try to score a touchdown, because it doesn't help anything. There's nothing that you gain by running for a touchdown there. The only thing that can happen is something bad. That's the only thing that can occur if you take off and run in that situation, is something bad. That's the only, like, it's just the whole when I hear you talking about 20 guys from the Rams not going, I'm in the same boat. I don't want Lamar Jackson playing in the preseason. I don't want, you know, Earl Thomas playing in the preseason, Marshall Yanda. We all know how meaningless this stuff is. And even a quarterback that still has development that's necessary, a guy like Lamar Jackson, obviously Mahomes doesn't need any development, but Lamar still needs to develop. I don't want him doing it in preseason games. That's a bad idea. There is zero to be gained from them. Stop playing these guys altogether.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. My one takeaway from last week was that Mahomes took the slide at the one instead of trying to plow his way in. You could tell he started to think,
smart.
Oh, I'm going to run over this guy, and then he got down in a hurry.
Right.
But I'm with you. I don't want him playing at all. How is, though, Lamar Jackson going to play in the regular season? He averaged 17 carries a game last year. They say they're not going to run him like that, but do you believe it?
No, I mean, that's the funny thing, right? They've spoken out of both sides of their mouth. They said originally, Steve Bisciotti, that wasn't what they wanted to do. Lamar said that wasn't going to be what they were going to do. But then Brian Billick was doing his show for NFL Network a couple weeks ago and had John Harbaugh on and brought up the running numbers and brought up Cam Newton's season high was, I mean, 139. And John Harbaugh said, oh, bet the over for that. Which, in fairness, like, Lamar already ran more than that a year ago, and he only played half the season. So, like, it's not surprising that that would be the number. The truth is he could actually average far fewer carries per game this season and still shatter his own record for the most carries by a quarterback in a season. But figuring that part out has been really difficult, Saran. I mean, this is a Greg Roman offense. They're going to run the ball. That's obvious. Like, they're not going to start throwing the ball 30 times a game in a Greg Roman offense. They want to try to be similar to what they were a year ago. When Lamar Jackson took over, they want to play defense and run the ball and have some of these college concepts. They're not going to become an aerial attack. What that becomes as far as the difference in number of times that Lamar is running the ball versus why they brought in Mark Ingram, who they believe can be a bit of a workhorse to give them depth, with obviously Gus Edwards, who was, you know, pretty good as a rookie a year ago, and then also bringing in Justice Hill, who I'm sure everybody knows down in Big 12 country, who is at Oklahoma State. They're going to be doing a lot of running in a lot of different ways. So figuring out exactly what that number is for how much Lamar is going to run, that's something that we're all trying to figure out. He's definitely going to run. It could be ultimately that it's less per game than it was a year ago, but I would still expect him to shatter and go past 150 carries for the season.
Losing Tavon Young at corner, what's that do?
Yeah, he's their only real slot corner. I mean, he's the only real nickel corner they had. I mean, they have other guys they're going to have options. You know, Brandon Carr's played there some and could be an option, but he's more of an outside corner. You know, they can move some of their safeties around. Anthony Levine could be an option to go play there. But he was the only guy they really trusted there, and they really liked him. And they think Tavon Young's one of the best slot corners in all of football. There's a reason why they gave him a really good chunk of change this offseason, despite the fact that we didn't know there was really that much of a market for him. They believe he's one of the best slot corners in the game. We all know how important that position is becoming at this point in the NFL. So it's going to hurt them. I mean, they've got some options. It's the one thing. They're deep in the secondary. It's the one place where they're really deep. Obviously, Jimmy Smith and Marlon Humphrey at corner, and then behind that, Brandon Carr and some of the young guys, Anthony Averett, the second-year guy from Alabama. So they'll have some options, but none who's a true slot corner. So that's definitely going to be something that's going to be an issue for them this year.
Yeah, by the way, when you hear Glenn saying Brandon Carr, it is that Brandon Carr.
Yeah.
That still, was a Kansas City Chief.
Right, and still doesn't miss a game, amazingly. Like, you know, like Brandon Carr's never been an exceptional, like, otherworldly type of player, but he never misses a game. It's almost, you know, I guess I should knock on whatever I can find around here, but it's staggering, his availability, right? Like, there is something to be said for a guy that never gets hurt and can play every week and is just still fairly solid.
Yeah.
Not spectacular, but a solid player.
No, I agree. And you're right. He's never been a superstar except for the eyes of Jerry Jones when he gave him that superstar contract.
Gave him a lot of money. Yeah.
God bless him.
Gave him a lot of money.
The Jones family doesn't need any more of it. I'm happy Brandon got it. I hope he's still got
it.
All right, last question. O's, number two pick. I mean, would they apply themselves? Like, what the hell is going on? Do they forget how to tank?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Well, against the Yankees, they had no problem remembering how to tank. They finished 2-17 against the Yankees this season, the same Yankees that turned around and got their asses handed to them by the Indians last night. They definitely want the number one pick. There's no doubt about that. But the Tigers are really bad, and they got rid of everything. I mean, there's just nothing left in Detroit. I have no idea how the Tigers could win, you know, 8 more games the entire season. So the Orioles and Tigers, much like a year ago with the Orioles and Royals, they had a September series. The Orioles managed to smartly lose every game of the series. The Orioles and Tigers do have one series in September, so that'll be the Orioles' sort of last chance to try to steal away the number one pick in next year's draft.
All right, Glenn Clark in Baltimore. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it, man. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks, Saran. Good to talk to you, dude.
It's New York, Philly.
Yes, indeed. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is next. Anthony Gargano, 97.5, The Fanatic. Anthony, how are you, sir?
Good. Real good, bro. How are you?
I'm doing well. Maybe not as well as Bryce Harper. Hits a grand slam walk-off after telling a fan to blank off on his way to the plate. Does it get better than that?
No, it doesn't. For the record, that fan had a Chicago accent. So we believe he wasn't from Philadelphia.
What, are you telling me Philly fans are always loving and supportive of the local squad?
Of course. Well, now they are because the beloved skipper is back with the team, Charlie Manuel. That's kind of changed everybody's outlook. It felt like the entire city wanted Gabe Kapler, still does, but the fact that Charlie is in the picture, who is a beloved, beloved character and a great baseball man, has kind of changed everybody's outlook toward that team.
Yeah, because we know it's the manager that will really change what happens, right? That's the key.
However, I will say this, though. Their approach has been a little bit different. The Phillies went from having no analytics to being all analytics, all launch angle, no hitting behind runners, no approach, very different than what Charlie is about, who's a really strong hitting guy. And I do think those guys, he'll have a little bit of an impact on them offensively. They still have any pitching, but they got some hitting.
Yeah, right. Let's turn our attention to the Philadelphia Eagles. Listen, who the hell is going to be the backup quarterback? I mean, I know you don't have anything to worry about because Carson Wentz has never missed any time, right? But now Cody Kessler is concussed. Where is their level of concern at the depth of quarterback?
Oh, it's big time. Doug Peterson spoke today about it. And, you know, never, I mean, had he had, you're looking at it and all of a sudden you lose both your backups. And, you know, they're extremely concerned. They're going to look for certain guys. They'll try to figure out if they can get by until Nate Sudfeld comes back. I mean, Sudfeld, they're hoping to be back mid-October. Kessler should be back at some point in the next couple weeks. But, you know, and their backup, Thorson, who's a kid from Northwestern, played pretty well last night. But again, you know, it's preseason. And look, you know, this whole season rides on Carson Wentz. The minute they pushed the button and Nick Foles went to Jacksonville, this was all about Carson, and it's all about Carson's health.
Yeah. Listen, if you need it, Chad Henne or Chase Litton are both available for a second-round pick. We know how Andy Reid likes his second-round picks for the backup quarterbacks.
Big Red is a genius when it comes to the backup quarterback. He once traded A.J. Feely to the Dolphins for that second-round pick. Andy knows his QBs, man.
Yeah, he does. He does. All right, any reason to believe that the Eagles aren't one of the favorites? I mean, I think they're right up there with the Saints for the favorite to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. You seen anything that would tell you otherwise?
You know, bro, the only thing is defensively, they could be a little shaky, certainly a linebacker. You're worried a little bit of a corner, got a lot of bodies. but you don't know how Sidney Jones is going to play with top big draft pick that there's 2 years ago was hurt. So they're back with some young faces. Derek Barnett, in the who is a terrific edge pass rusher, he's got to get double-digit sacks. They got really good push up front with Malik Jackson, and Fletcher Cox is one of the best. So that should help the edge pass rushers. But other than that, I mean, offensively, wow, they could be really, really scary. Both tight ends are real good. They're going to be putting a lot of 12 personnel, so you'll see both Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz in the game. DeSean Jackson looks like he's reborn. So you had the Carson never really had that flyer on the outside to really open things up down the field. I'm telling you, offensively, this team could be really scary. Not as scary as you guys, not as scary as the Chiefs, but pretty scary.
Yeah, no, I think the Eagles look pretty darn good, that's for sure. Anthony Gargano, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, brother. Great stuff by you, man. Take care.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk some baseball. Royals and Mets. It is a replay of the 2015 World Series. It's going on out at the K. Here to talk about the ball club is the manager of the Royals, Ned Yost. He's on our Sprint guest line. Ned, how are you, sir?
Doing good, Sprint. How are you?
I'm doing very good. And let's start with what ultimately ends up being good news, but certainly a very scary situation. Dale Earnhardt Jr., whom I know you know very well, and certainly we're good friends with his father. He, his wife, and young child surviving a plane crash. I know what kind of a shocker it was for us. How scary was that, knowing the family?
No, I mean, it was scary, but I mean, if you're gonna crash a plane, you're best doing it on the ground, and that's what happened. They landed and just couldn't get it to stop. Ran through a fence, at the end of the runway, and ultimately caught fire. But Dale, Amy, and Isla, and the dog actually, and the two pilots were able to get out. Without any injury, and they're all doing fine. I texted Dale this morning and just told him, I'm just so pleased you guys are okay. And he said, we're fine. Thanks for thinking of us. And I'm in. There's a bunch of people thinking about you, and there's a lot of people relieved that you guys were able to walk away from that. So that was great news.
Travel is the reality of all sports, all professional sports, and there's a lot of it. I'm curious, in all of the planes you've been on, have you ever had any close calls like that?
Well, now, I mean, we one time I think in Atlanta one time we went to make the whip U-turn. You know how you're going down the before you take off and then you turn and,
yeah.
They hit the engines. Well, all of a sudden, as soon as they hit the engines, the whole cabin filled up with smoke. So they had to slam on the brakes before we took off, and then everybody slid down the slide. That's the only time I've ever done that one. And, there was times where, I mean, we'd have a lot of, especially when Dale was alive, we'd have a lot of fun in his planes. But, like we tried to take it up to as far as we could. One time got it up to 52,000 feet and, just seeing how high we could go. And in the Learjet. Yeah, just stuff like that. But never really any, any issues with Dale's planes.
So is that like I'm no aviation expert. I say a quick prayer every time I get on a plane that it we're going to land, because it still kind of scares me a little bit, just the limited amount of travel I have to do. I would never, ever consider testing the limits of an aircraft. Was this considered fun by you guys, or was this a
dare? We were laughing our heads off. Yeah, we were having, and it was even funner when the control tower call and says, hey, what you boys doing up there? And the pilot said, we're just recharging our solar batteries. And, I said, all right, well, just be careful. So we wanted to see how high it would go. And like 52,500 feet is when we couldn't really climb anymore. So oxygen in the plane was, just really, but it was just experiences, we'd have a good time on those planes.
Oh, my God.
But it was just me and Dale and the pilot. It wasn't, you know, Dale, I'm not saying Dale Jr. had his family. He's not, Dale Jr.'s not one to mess around. So,
no.
It just was an unfortunate accident. But, again, I'm really glad that, you know, it happened on the ground and not, you know, in the air or going to the ground.
Test pilot Ned Yost is with us here in the program. All right, let's talk about the performance Mike Montgomery put together. 7 innings. 4 hits, no runs, no walks, 12 strikeouts. Only the third left-handed pitcher in Royals history to have 12 or more strikeouts in a game. He seemingly is getting better with each start. I know you guys knew there was a ceiling there. I know, Dayton and his staff are familiar with him from having drafted him and developed him. But did you think you'd be seeing 12 punchouts this quick in acquiring him?
I've seen Mike. Mike was, in that group of really solid young starting pitchers that we had when I first came on board. So, and had seen him pitch great against us on numerous occasions. So, yeah, I just figured that, you know, since we got him built up and, you know, got his, his pitch count up to where he could maintain his mechanics, I knew his stuff was really, really good. So it was just a matter of time. You know, did I think 12 strikeouts? I thought he would be really, really good. I didn't really put a number on what I thought he would be able to do, but I just thought that, he would pitch good for us once he got lengthened out.
Everybody has a career day where they have their best performance, but generally strikeouts is something that are, you know, there's a commonality to it. You know, a guy's kind of a 3 or 4 or 5 a game strikeout guy. He has come over and in what I think it was – he had a 5-inning, one of his first outings was 5+ innings, and he had 0 strikeouts. I mean, is it more today's game that guys are going for launch angle and home runs, so they're more susceptible to strikeouts, that you can have that kind of variance just in the course of several weeks?
I think so, and I think it matters too. I mean, you know, obviously the day he didn't have any strikeouts, he didn't have as good cutter and as good command of his fastball and his good curveball, which, you know, when he has command, he can start dicing guys up a little bit more and executing his pitches and still getting a feel for his pitches early, when he was getting lengthened out. And now with the consistency of the routine and the side sessions in between, start and, you know, being able to work, it's all kind of coming together for him.
Let's talk about another one of your starters, Brad Keller. He goes 6 innings of no-hit ball. Ultimately, then it comes unraveled, certainly not by rockets being hit all over the yard. Kind of maybe it'd been a benefit, benefited from some good luck and where some balls have been placed. He certainly didn't get any luck in the 7th and where they were. He had 95 pitches going into that 7th inning. Did you consider not sending him back out?
No, I never considered not sending him back out. First thing he did, you know, in those situations, first thing you do is what I do is I walk up, look him in the eye, and ask him how he's doing. And he's like, I'm great. I feel good. I'm strong. And 95 pitches is nothing for a big guy like him. You know, I think my mindset was I was going to take him to 115. That was another, 20 pitches. Or if he ended up giving up a run, and at that point it didn't, you know, I was hoping that we could get through the 7th inning, give him a chance to win that ball game if we scored in the bottom of the 7th. It just didn't happen.
So he was averaging about 16 pitches an inning. So if he had 20 more, that was basically another inning. If he had, you know, what is your mindset now? We've seen more relay no hitters. We've seen guys, it's become more of a thing around the league. Taking guys out when they have a no-hitters when, you know, just 5 years ago, man, it didn't matter how many pitches a guy had. If he had a shot at a no-hitter, he was staying in the game. If he had a no-hitter and, you know, 115 after 7, was he going back out there? Where do you sit on that kind of
thing? No, I was not going to send him back out after that. I mean, there's no way. If he had 115 after 8, I would think about it. Now, without the 3 walks, he probably might have been able to get through the 8th inning, you know, and then you think about it. But to get 6 more outs at 115, there's no way. 8th inning might be a little bit different, but no way I'd do it in the 7th.
Did you think he had his best stuff or what?
No.
Was okay.
No, I knew he didn't have his best stuff. I knew he was fighting command, especially with his slider, but I knew he had a good fastball, and I knew that it had good action to it, but he was very inconsistent with the slider. We would lose his mechanics. And you'd see that's why he'd go ball one, ball two, ball three, and then strike, then ball four. He'd walk a guy, and then he'd get his mechanics back, and then he'd command, and then he'd get out of his mechanics again, and he'd fight to get back in him. So, no, I knew it was a grind for him the whole start.
Where do you sit as far as the third time through on an order? On you know,
depends on what the score is. You can't just blatantly ask me, where do I sit? You know, if I've got a 10-run lead, you know, I just throw them back out. But, again, with a 1-run lead, you know, it depends. It just depends on what the lead is, how the pitcher's throwing, what's the state of the bullpen. There's a lot of factors that roll into that.
And in 0-0 was where you sat that night, right?
Yeah, it was 0-0. But, again, you pitched seven no-hit innings. I mean, you would like to give the kid an opportunity, especially an up-and-coming kid that is going through, you know, his learning stages, if you will. I guess that's not really a good phrase for it. But, you know, he's gaining valuable experience this year on things that he needs to do to continue to be successful. And you want to give him that opportunity. His pitch count was fine, and he was, he was strong and healthy. And I kind of laugh at these things because if I'd have taken him out, then people would have been screaming and yelling, why'd you take him out? And so, you know, it's just one of those situations where I was going to give him the opportunity to try to get through the seventh inning.
How important is the experience part of trying to go through and say, okay, I've got a little bit of history going here? I mean, the moment right now, obviously the team is not – there's not going to be a game that is life or death in the standings. But
yeah,
for that opportunity, what kind of experience does he gain from going through that?
Huge. It's huge opportunity right now. Learning that when you're battling your mechanics to get through that big inning – and it all goes back, Saran, to, you know, years ago when people wanted to know why I didn't pinch hit for Escobar. Because I wanted him to go through every situation that he could go through, every pressure situation that he could go through when it didn't matter, so that when it did matter, he'd be ready. And, of course, we all saw what happened. You know, he was clutch, was the, you know, MVP of the league championship series. And, that you know, that experience helped him gain that ability to be productive in a championship scenario. And that's what we do with these kids. We try to put them through every bit of, you know, experience that they can get so that when the time comes, they're going to have all these experiences under their belt. That's, you know, it's like today. I battled, you know, do I play Bubba against, you know, Syndergaard. Syndergaard is as tough as they come. But, you know, Bubba's going to need to face these guys. He's going to need to do it now to understand, you know, what a true number one looks like. So, you know, Bubba's in there today. So, you know, it's just trying to, especially when, you know, when it doesn't mean much now, the experience that they're gaining is invaluable for when it does mean something in the years to come.
You mentioned Escobar and Syndergaard. I've heard more than one fan, and I know you guys have faced the Mets, have faced, turned right around and faced them right after that next season after winning the World Series. But do you have any thoughts in your head? I've heard a number of fans talk about Syndergaard going up high on Escobar in the World Series. Is that a memory that's still there in your head?
I mean, I thought Syndergaard was smart doing that. You know, so much was being made about first pitch swinging, and you know, I thought it was a good tactic. It wasn't that close. It was up, and people make more. You know, if it missed him by an inch or two, you know, I think I'd be more upset. It was just kind of sending a little telegram: hey, you're not going to hit the first pitch, and I don't know about the second, but nah, it didn't bother me.
Ned Yost is with us. Time for our Kansas Lottery Final Four. Ned, four quickies for you. I'll start you with this. I'm curious, how many fantasy leagues are you in? Fantasy sports leagues?
None.
Shocking. Shocking.
Well, I used to be in a NASCAR fantasy league.
Okay.
The last couple of years, and we didn't do it this year. But you know, it was my old group from Milwaukee. Me and Dale Swaim and Chuck Hawk, the visiting clubhouse guy here,
yep.
and then Robin Yount and a bunch of Milwaukee guys. And we didn't do it this year. So you know, I've always been in a NASCAR fantasy league until this year's my first year. I'm not.
All right. Speaking of NASCAR, you like or dislike the playoff system?
I actually like the playoff system. I think it's pretty interesting. You know, it keeps my attention.
All right. What's your favorite cracker?
Saltine, just your regular saltine cracker. Crazy. I like it. I'll make a little tuna and put, you know, a little tuna on a cracker, and it's a great snack.
All right. I love it. And finally, have you ever at any level caught a no-hitter?
No. Because if I did, I would remember it, and I sure don't remember it. I've seen no hitters at the big league level. We had a combined no hitter in Atlanta, and Kent Merker threw a no hitter one time in Atlanta against the Dodgers. But and I've had no hitters thrown against us, but I've never caught one. No, and then never been a manager for one.
By the way, was that the Rolodex of your mind spinning there that I was hearing?
Yeah, that was it. Did you hear it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was fantastic. I like that. Ned, hey, thanks so much for the time. We always appreciate it. Best of luck with the Mets here this weekend.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thanks.
A new way to end your day. The program. Now from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Do your job, Boyd. Stop looking surprised here.
The Joes,
you're
Kansas
no Curtis
City,
Seabolt. I'm going to tell you that right
end
now.
End of the hour answer. What team holds the longest drive by time of possession in a Super Bowl?
Ooh, longest drive by time. I like this question.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Longest drive by time of possession. I don't know. Was it – this would be too fitting because I always defend Andy Reid's clock management. Was it his hurry-up drive? With Donovan McNabb to cut the lead to 7? It's not. I know it's not. I don't know. Is it the Patriots last year and one of their run it all the way down the field?
Nope, but it was against the Patriots.
In the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Touchdown drive or just scoring
it
drive?
It was a scoring drive.
Against the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be the Packers with Brett Favre when they won. Could be the Bears in 85 when the Bears won. It could be the two Giants losses.
Panthers.
Like to grind away. Panthers. Panthers were a running team. Panthers.
No, you were close with the Giants. It was an NFC East opponent. It was the New York Giants in Super Bowl 42. It was that first drive of the game. They went all the way. It was 9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
And, yeah.
What
and
year? Which
this
one?
This was the perfect season year for the they were going for the perfect season, Super Bowl 42, 2008, or 2007 season, 2008 Super
right,
Bowl.
Right, 2007.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Because it was 17-14. It was a low-scoring game.
Yeah, it was.
And then the Patriots had a 5-minute 30-second drive right after that. So that they had a
that was the whole first quarter.
Yes, basically.
Basically, we're done. Now we're moving on. Quarter number two, and the Super Bowl sponsors were all freaking out. We're not going to get any commercials in.
No.
No, trust me, they'd get the commercials in. They'd stop everything to make that happen. Our thanks to Ned Yost. By the way, I don't agree. I mean, there's no reason to send him back out there. I'm going to tell you that. And when Ned says, well, no, I, you know, about 120 was as much as he was going to go. He wasn't going to get there.
No.
You're basically asking a miracle to happen, so I'm not going to, you know.
I'm not going to harp on it.
No, I'm not going to harp on it, but I don't agree.
Yeah.
And I think the worst thing that can happen is you get, you know, another inning, and then you're sitting at 116 and you're through 7. Well, what do I do? I'm going to go to 120. maybe he'll get a three-pitch inning.
Isn't it Dontrell Willis who had like 147 pitches in a no-hitter or something?
Oh, there's been a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Man, David Cohen wasn't a no-hitter. David Cohen had some 150-plus pitch outings for the Royals. It's wild. It's wild. It's a new era. I'll tell you how new. Danny Klinkskill's here on time, and he brought his purse.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
Bryce Harper has 6 career walk-off home runs after last night. That is the second most in the league since he debuted in 2012. Who has the most in that time? Presented by Good Sense.